If you've ever searched for free software online, maybe for a school project to help run your small business or just, to tinker with on your computer, you might have noticed it feels a bit different these days.
Yeah, it definitely does.
Okay, let's unpack this.
What's really interesting here is this subtle shift in the digital world. It really does seem harder to find those independent websites, the ones offering free software downloads.
Those places that used to be everywhere, right?
Exactly. They were so common.
Yeah. So today we're diving into why finding those trusty free software download websites seems tougher now, and what's changed really in how independent creators share their programs with the world.
And to really get to the bottom of this, we're looking at it from a couple of angles. We've got the experiences of an independent software developer trying to navigate this new environment,
Okay.
and also a broader look at how software distribution itself is, well, changing shape.
Right. So our mission today is to understand why this change is happening, what it means for you when you're out there looking for free software, and what the ripple effects are for the folks who actually make that software.
And if you've had that feeling, that sense that the landscape for finding free software has become a bit, well, barren,
Yeah.
you're definitely not imagining things.
And that feeling is kind of where our developer's story really kicks in, isn't it?
It is.
They set out to find a reasonable number. I think they were aiming for around 50 active websites still dedicated to free and shareware downloads.
Yes, yeah, specifically sites that still use this system called the PAD file for submissions. We'll get into what that is,
Okay.
but what's really telling is the result. Instead of 50,
How many did they find?
only about half that, around 25 active sites.
Wow. Only 25.
Yeah, that really throws into sharp relief how much that landscape has shrunk. And, the decline isn't just about fewer websites, it's really a symptom of a larger move away from a more, let's say, open way of sharing software.
It really does feel like those digital tumbleweeds they mentioned are blowing through what used to be a pretty lively online space for free programs.
Totally.
And some of the big names we might remember are either just gone completely or, well, let's just say they're not the reliable places they once were.
Precisely. Our source specifically mentioned soft32.com and Freeware Files. Gone. Shuttered.
Wow, those are big ones.
They were go-to places for finding all sorts of free applications for your computer.
And there's download.com, which is run by CNET. I mean, a lot of people who've been online for a while will definitely remember that name.
Oh, for sure.
But our source raises a pretty serious red flag about them now, potentially including unwanted software, maybe even malware with downloads these days.
Which is a huge shift, right? From being seen as a trustworthy source to that.
It really highlights the struggle for these older platforms to stay relevant and crucially trustworthy, especially with the rise of new ways to get software.
Absolutely. And some of these sites have just changed direction completely, maybe focusing more on tech news instead of actual downloads.
Right.
And what's also really significant is how many have just stopped using or updating their support for something called PAD files, or the documentation is ancient or just missing.
Okay, let's unpack this PADI file thing. Our source called it every developer's friend. What exactly was it, and why was it so important, especially for those smaller developers?
Right. So think of a PAD file as like a standardized digital resume, but for a piece of software.
A resume for software. Okay.
Yeah. It was introduced way back in 1998 by the Association of Software Professionals, or ASP. It's basically an XML file, just a structured text file that holds all the key info about an application.
Like what?
Things like its name, what it actually does, the version number, system requirements, maybe a link to the developer's website, that kind of stuff.
So instead of filling out, I don't know, 50 different forms for 50 different websites where a developer wanted to offer their free software, they can just create one of these PAD files and submit it everywhere.
That was the idea. Sounds like a huge time saver, right? Especially for someone maybe working on a project in their spare time, like a student or a hobbyist.
Or a small business just trying to share a useful tool they built.
Precisely. It made it much, much easier for independent developers, those students, hobbyists, small teams, maybe without big marketing budgets, to get their software listed on multiple download platforms. It really streamlined the whole process of sharing their creations across the internet.
That sounds incredibly helpful, like really useful. So, what happened? Why isn't this developer's friend the go-to method anymore?
Well, unfortunately, its use has just plummeted. As our source points out, by 2025, you see so many of those older download sites have either closed down, changed their focus, or just stopped properly supporting PAD files.
So, the system itself kind of crumbled.
Essentially, yes. The underlying system, the infrastructure that made it work so well, has largely become obsolete. And this decline, it isn't just about an outdated file format. It's really a symptom of that larger move away from open, decentralized software distribution towards these more controlled platforms.
Why the shift, though? I mean, it sounds like PAD files were convenient. What pushed them aside?
Well, several things were happening at once, really. But
yeah.
A big one is that the infrastructure supporting PA files just aged out. The very organization that created and maintained it, the ASP, they actually ceased operations back in December 2021.
Ah, okay, that's significant.
It meant no more official updates to the standard, no governing body, and it also signaled the end for some important tools that developers relied on.
Like that AppVisor tool our source mentioned, was that one of them?
Exactly. AppVisor was a key piece of software. It helped developers easily submit their PAD files to lots and lots of different download sites all at once. Huge time saver.
And it shut down.
It shut down in March 2024. And alongside that, we saw many of the free tools for actually creating and submitting PAD files start to disappear.
Replaced by?
Often replaced by paid services. Suddenly, something that was essentially free for developers to use became another expense. We're talking fees for submission, sometimes like $150, and even yearly charges, maybe $36 a year, just for approval.
Wow. Okay. That definitely creates a financial hurdle, doesn't it? Especially for those smaller independent developers, the students, the hobbyists we were just talking about.
Absolutely. If you're just sharing something for free, adding costs like that makes it much less appealing or even impossible.
Yeah, that makes sense. It really does make it harder for individual creators or very small teams to just get their free software out there easily.
It does. And beyond the money aspect, the PAD file format itself hadn't really kept pace with how software has evolved over, what, 25 years? Well, the last major version, 4.0, even had some technical limitations that restricted how the data could be used, which made it less flexible for site owners. But more fundamentally, PAD files were really designed for traditional desktop software, you know, programs you install on a Windows PC or a Mac.
Right. XC files and things like that.
Exactly. They don't really handle the complexities of modern software very well. Think about apps for your phone or tablet, programs that run entirely in the cloud, software that needs constant dynamic updates, or things that need deep integration with online services or work across multiple platforms. PAD wasn't built for that.
So basically, as we all move towards mobile apps and online services, the PAD file just kind of got left behind.
In many ways, yes. It just couldn't keep up. And this whole shift lines up perfectly with the rise of what our source calls walled gardens.
Ah, the walled gardens. You mean the big centralized app stores?
Precisely. Like the Google Play Store for Android devices and the Microsoft Store for Windows.
Okay. So how did they contribute to the decline of that older, more open way of sharing free software using things like PAD files?
Well, they offered a really compelling alternative, both for users looking for software and for the developers creating it.
How so for users?
For users, the app stores provided a single, generally trusted place to find and install software. There's a greater sense of security, or at least a perception of it, because these stores actively scan for malware and usually have some kind of review process, even if it's not perfect.
Right. That's a big difference from the sort of Wild West feel you could sometimes get on older download sites wondering if a download was safe.
Exactly. That trust factor is huge. It definitely feels safer to download from a platform that claims to do some level of checking.
Makes sense. And for the developers, what was the appeal there?
For developers, the app stores offer built-in ways to actually make money, things like in-app purchases, subscriptions alongside tools to see how their software was being used, you know, analytics.
Monetization and data.
Right. Plus, and this is key, they provide access to a massive, massive global audience, billions of potential users, something those individual freeware download sites just couldn't possibly match.
So the old model, where maybe an indie developer relied on donations or hoped people would upgrade to a paid pro version of their free software, that started to look less attractive.
Much less attractive compared to the integrated monetization and sheer reach offered by the app stores. Modern ways of making money from software often really depend on the kind of infrastructure that only these big stores provide.
Like payment processing and stuff.
Exactly. Our source even mentions that the Microsoft Store actually requires developers to use their specific system, their APIs, for handling payments within apps if they want to be in the store.
Wow. So they kind of lock you in.
It makes it much harder or sometimes impossible, for developers to effectively monetize their software if they try to distribute it outside of the store using other methods.
And our expectations as users have shifted too, haven't they? I mean, we've gotten used to apps just installing with one click and updating automatically in the background.
Oh, completely. App stores handle all of that pretty seamlessly. Whereas the older download sites, you often had to manually download an installer, run it, figure out where to put it.
And then remember to go back and check for updates later.
Right. Which could be a hassle and honestly a security risk if people didn't keep their software up to date. App stores took away a lot of that friction.
So it sounds like it became a lot more work and maybe less rewarding for those traditional download sites to even stay competitive.
Immensely challenging. The technical and practical hurdles became huge. Just keeping their sites free of malware requires constant vigilance and significant resources. That's not cheap.
And the costs of just running the site.
Exactly. Server costs, bandwidth costs for all those downloads, those are high. And at the same time, the advertising revenue they often relied on started to decline, partly because of ad blockers, but also because traffic was shifting to the app stores.
So fewer visitors, less income, rising costs.
It's a perfect storm, really. It's no wonder we saw sites like soft32.com and freewarefiles just close their doors entirely. And even a big player like cnetdownload.com apparently scale back and, as we heard, potentially compromise on quality.
Which really hurts those independent developers who might have relied on those platforms, however imperfect, to get their software seen.
Definitely. And the preferences of both software creators and the people looking for software just reinforce this whole cycle. Developers aiming to make a steady income, understandably, move towards the streamlined submission processes and huge audiences of the app stores, even if those stores came with their own, sometimes strict sets of rules.
Even though submitting PA files was technically free, right?
Right. Submitting PA files was often free in terms of money, but it took a lot of time and effort to submit to dozens, maybe hundreds, of different sites, each potentially with slightly different requirements or quirks.
Compared to submitting once to an app store.
Exactly. App stores, despite their regulations and fees, offered a more centralized, efficient way to reach a massive number of users. And as we've discussed, users increasingly preferred the perceived security and the user-friendly experience of the app stores.
It really sounds like the two giants, Google Play and the Microsoft Store, became the dominant forces shaping this new landscape. Let's dig into their influence a bit more, maybe starting with the Google Play Store.
Yeah, the Google Play Store's scale is just staggering. Over 2.4 million apps available by 2025, as our source noted. Its impact on that traditional freeware download scene has been profound.
Our source mentioned Google having increasingly stringent policies in app purchases. What was driving that? Sounds pretty dramatic.
It was. Around 2024, Google significantly tightened up its minimum quality standards. They specifically went after apps they considered to have limited functionality and content.
Meaning what, exactly? Like really simple apps?
Yeah. Potentially very basic apps, maybe clones, things that didn't offer much unique value. This led to a massive cleanup, a 47% drop in the number of listings.
47%.
Yeah. Over 2.3 million apps and about 158,000 developer accounts were removed. And arguably, many of these were the kind of very simple, sometimes low-quality apps that you might have once found scattered across some of the less curated freeware download sites.
So, in a way, Google was tidying up its own house, which users probably appreciated.
Right. It improved the overall quality perception.
But it also potentially made it harder for very simple, maybe experimental, free apps created by individuals or small teams to even get listed. It raised the barrier to entry.
That's a really good way to put it. While it undoubtedly boosted the overall quality and security reputation of the Play Store, it also raised the bar. Their security measures, automated checks, malware scans, human reviews certainly built user trust, which further pulled users away from potentially riskier third-party download sites.
And they also offer carrots for developers too, right? Even though there's that one-time $25 fee to get a developer account set up.
Yes, absolutely. Things like their Play App signing service, which helps manage security keys, detailed usage analytics, various ways to monetize apps. These make the platform very attractive for many developers.
But that fee, $25, might not sound like much, but you mentioned our developer source highlighted it.
Yeah, especially for developers outside the U.S. or those with very limited resources, like students. Compared to the historically free nature of PA submissions, even a small fee like $25 can be a genuine barrier to entry.
It's a good reminder that even small costs can be significant depending on your circumstances. And Google's reach, with over 1 billion active users, That's hard to ignore.
It really solidifies their dominant position. It's telling that even alternative open-source platforms for Android apps like F-Droid, which you might think would champion other distribution methods, they primarily focus on distributing APK files, the standard Android app package, rather than supporting something like PAD files. It just shows how much the App Store model, even for open source, has become the expected norm.
Okay, so that's the Android side. Now, let's switch over to the other major player, the Microsoft Store, particularly relevant for those of us using Windows computers.
Right. The Microsoft Store has a huge advantage just by being pre-installed on Windows 11. That gives it incredible visibility for desktop applications right out of the box.
So similar to Google Play, it offers a central place for users to find software.
Exactly. It aims to be that trusted, convenient hub for Windows software, much like Google Play is for Android.
And presumably, they also have their own set of rules and quality standards that developers need to jump through.
They definitely do. They have quite strict certification requirements. Developers might need to provide things like functional servers if their app has online components, demo accounts for reviewers, and sometimes even support for different languages or regions.
So it's a higher bar than just writing up a simple PAD file description.
Oh, certainly. It generally requires a more polished, tested, and well-documented piece of software compared to what might have been acceptable via a simple PAD submission in the past.
And just like Google, they also have their preferred ways for developers to make money from apps within the store.
Yes, we touched on that. They strongly encourage, and in some cases mandate, the use of their own in-app purchase APIs.
Right, tying monetization to their platform.
Which again discourages developers from relying on older third-party download sites if they hope to earn revenue from their software. Microsoft also places a strong emphasis on security, notably requiring developers to use code signing certificates.
What does that involve?
It's a way to digitally sign the software to prove it came from a verified developer and hasn't been tampered with. It adds a layer of trust for the user, which is good.
But
it also introduces extra costs and complexity for developers. Getting a certificate costs money. So some developers might prefer the streamlined, albeit potentially costly, approach of the Microsoft Store over managing PAD files and separate code signing for distribution elsewhere.
And you mentioned Microsoft has fees too.
Yes. Our source noted the Microsoft Store individual developer account fee is around $19 USD, and a company account is significantly more, about $99 USD. Again, potential financial barriers, especially for smaller creators or those outside major markets.
So when you put the influence of both the Google Play Store and the Microsoft Store together, what's the overall impact? What's the big picture effect on that older ecosystem of free software websites?
Well, it's created that feedback loop, that cycle we talked about earlier. Users gravitate towards the app stores because they're convenient, feel more secure, and are integrated into their devices.
Okay.
Developers naturally follow the users, and they're also drawn by the built-in monetization tools and the massive potential audience.
Right.
This leads to fewer visitors and critically fewer new software submissions for the traditional download sites that relied on things like PA files.
Which makes them less useful, less vibrant.
Exactly. And financially unsustainable. Less traffic means less ad revenue while costs remain. This leads directly to their decline or closure. We saw it happen with sites that were once staples like Tucows switching focus, Soft32.com closing, Freeware files disappearing, and even CNetDownload.com seemingly struggling.
It's a cascading effect, really.
It really is.
So let's bring it back to the people involved. What does all of this really mean for the average person just looking for some free software for their computer or maybe their small business? And what about those independent developers who maybe aren't trying to build the next big commercial hit, but just want to share a useful tool they created?
Yeah, that's the crucial question. For independent developers, especially those smaller teams, the hobbyists, the students, maybe people working on more niche or experimental software, the shrinking options for distribution are a real problem.
Fewer places to share their work easily.
Exactly. The app stores, with all their policies, review processes, and fees, can create significantly higher hurdles to overcome compared to the relatively open environment that the freeware download sites and the PAD file system represented, for all its flaws.
So there's a risk of losing some of that grassroots innovation.
I think there is, yeah. There's a genuine concern that some of that innovative spirit, that creativity fostered by the old freeware culture, where people just shared cool stuff they made, might get stifled. The strong focus on monetization within app stores might unintentionally discourage people from simply creating and sharing useful software for free.
And you mentioned the walled garden aspect. While app stores prioritize security, which is good, does this more centralized control have downsides?
It could. It might mean that certain types of less conventional, perhaps more privacy-focused, or truly free and open-source software find it harder to get visibility or might not even meet the store policies. A completely centralized system could inadvertently limit the sheer variety and type of software that's easily available to users.
That's a really important point. Security is vital, but diversity and accessibility matter too.
Absolutely.
Now, our source briefly mentioned some alternative platforms, things like GitHub and itch.io. Could these potentially step in to fill the gap left by the disappearing download sites? Are they viable alternatives for the average user looking for free tools?
They definitely offer possibilities, especially for developers looking for places to host their code and projects. GitHub is obviously massive for open source development. Itch.io is popular for indie games, but also hosts other software. But they also come with their own set of challenges, particularly for the average non-technical user. GitHub, for instance, while powerful, can be pretty intimidating if you're not familiar with things like repositories, releases, or sometimes even needing command line tools to build or install something.
Yeah, it's not exactly designed for simple browsing and one-click installs typically.
Not usually, no. And itch.io, while maybe more user-friendly for browsing, can sometimes feel less organized for general software. And the quality and reliability of software can vary wildly because there isn't the same level of formal vetting you expect from a major app store.
And security is probably more of a user beware situation on those platforms too.
Generally, yes. They don't typically have the same rigorous automated malware scanning and review processes as the big app stores. So while they offer openness, users need to be a bit more cautious about what they download and run. Plus, the level of ongoing support or updates for software found there can be inconsistent compared to more polished, commercially backed options.
So it sounds like there isn't a perfect replacement yet for that middle ground the old download sites occupied?
Not a perfect one, no. It seems we shifted towards these two extremes, the highly curated but sometimes restrictive app stores, and the very open but potentially less user-friendly and less vetted platforms like GitHub.
So given this landscape, how do we keep that spirit of freely available, useful software alive? What can be done?
It's probably going to require effort on multiple fronts. For developers who can afford the fees and meet the policies, prioritizing the app stores makes sense for reaching a broad audience. But perhaps they could also maintain a presence on whatever niche download sites remain relevant for specific types of software, like desktop utilities.
What about the download sites themselves?
For the ones that are still around, investing in modern ways for developers to submit their software. Maybe using APIs, which are like standardized ways for computer systems to talk to each other, could be crucial, something more efficient than manually managing PDA files.
And maybe reviving the idea behind the ASP?
Possibly. Maybe some kind of new industry body or standard could emerge to help standardize metadata and distribution for software outside the main app stores, addressing the limitations PAD had. That's a long shot, perhaps, but the need seems to be there.
And what about for us, the people who use the software? What can we do?
Well, we actually have a role to play, too. If you find useful independent software, especially freeware, consider supporting the developers directly, perhaps through donations, if they offer that option.
Okay.
And also, just actively seeking out and sharing information about alternative platforms or any good, still active freeware download sites can make a real difference. Word-of-mouth recommendations, sharing links on social media, participating in relevant online communities like Reddit forums, all of that can help boost visibility for independent creators and their work.
So basically, don't just rely on the App Store search. Be a bit more proactive in finding and supporting indie software.
Exactly. Be curious. Explore a little.
This has been a really insightful look into how things have changed, the disappearance or at least the fading of those familiar freeware download websites and the decline of the PAD file system really do signal a significant shift, don't they?
Absolutely. A major shift in how software is distributed.
And it's largely driven by the dominance of these huge app store walled gardens, which, as we've discussed, has considerable implications, both good and bad, for independent developers, and ultimately for the availability and variety of free software for users like you.
Yeah, it impacts everyone who uses computers and software.
So I guess the big question hanging in the air is, what does this all mean for the future of finding and sharing software outside of these major platforms? It really raises an important point about finding the right balance, doesn't it? The balance between the convenience and security of centralized control and the open, perhaps slightly messier, but often innovative spirit of the early internet.
That's the core tension right there.
Maybe it's worth taking a look, as you suggested. Consider exploring some of those alternative platforms we mentioned, like itch.io, or looking through GitHub releases for interesting projects. You might just find the next hidden gem of free software out there.